Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. So, hello, ladies. Welcome back, Stephanie Ruper and dear Sarah, who's probably on cloud nine from her very first book signing today. How's everybody?
I am on cloud nine. Yeah. Stephanie, how are you?
I'm good. I'm more interested in your book signing. Was that, like, really rewarding?
It was really fun. So, it was my first ever book signing, and I did it at my local Whole Foods. Like, it was like my Whole Foods, so it was really nice because I just know everybody, and I was able to work with them. They had a bunch of like paleo-friendly tastings throughout the store. They had this huge display. They got this giant poster printed, and they had signs all over the place. Wow. And they were just awesome. And I was so nervous. I don't know how many various like outfit jewelry combinations I tried on this morning, trying to be like, okay, I want to pick something that's really flattering, but that's going to be like not like boring black, and it's going to be something that's, you know, going to be nice in pictures because all these people are going to have pictures with me. And it, I mean, I ended up like texting my mom photos. So it's like asking my husband, I'm like, oh, never mind, you don't get it. So I'm like texting my mom photos, like, so should I have the necklace like this way or the necklace this way? It was, I don't think I've put that much thought into what I'm wearing ever. Like, yeah, maybe ever. I put thought into my wedding. That was pretty much the last time I really like was trying to figure out exactly what the best options were to wear. So I was nervous. So it was just like how I was processing being so nervous. And I don't even know what I was nervous about. As soon as I got there, and there were people who had driven 3 hours to see me. I know, isn't that crazy town? And there was like,
well, no,
it, to me, it's so flattering and humbling and just amazing all at the same time. And so for all of those of you who mentioned being regular podcast listeners who came out to my book signing today, I just, I know you listen now, so I could say thank you to you directly. It was awesome. And I ended up being able to have, you know, conversations with everybody, and I just decided I was going to hug every single person. So I got tons of amazing hugs. My fans, the people who came, they're all really good huggers. Like, I was just really impressed with how many people just gave me like this like great, huge, like, I can't believe I get to like give you a hug hugs that were just awesome. And I didn't sit the whole time, even though they had a chair for me. And it was just a crazy experience. So I found like now I'm sort of coming down from the adrenaline high of, you know, signing books for 2.5 hours, and it was really fun. I think I could probably do that again.
Yeah.
Stacy, I think at least a dozen people mentioned how much they love you and that they have Beyond Bacon and that they love it. It was apparently we should be like a pair and we should do everything together, because everyone kept saying, I love you and I love Stacy and I already have Stacy's book and I'm so excited to meet you. And it was like,
I get the same thing when I go to places. Yeah. They're always like, where's Sarah? And I'm like, you do realize she lives like 8 hours away from me.
Yeah. We're 8 hours not driving the speed limit.
Yeah. So we are a pair. What do you mean we should be a pair? We are a pair.
No. I mean, like, we should do more like public events where people actually see both of us.
Ha ha ha. Funny you should mention that, because upcoming on March 8th and 9th, you can find Sarah and I both together in the same state.
And probably giggling.
Most likely. I'm not going to care that much about what I wear, though. So.
So your old hat at this. This is my first one. I will probably be nervous before the next one. It'll take a few before I'm like.
It's really cute and awesome. I remember the last signing I did also was at a Whole Foods, and I literally was wearing Athleta, a Beyond Bacon shirt, and hadn't showered after working out at the Strongman gym less than 20 minutes. Like, we literally went from the Strongman gym to the Whole Foods, and I didn't even shower. So,
okay, I would like to make a promise to my fans right now. I will always shower before book signings. I am not going there.
I am practicing what I preach.
I will be huggable at all book signings.
Are you telling me that my hard-earned sweat is not huggable? I know Stephanie would hug me if I had just worked out.
Stacey, you read my mind. I was just about to get indignant and rabid and passionate about hugging you even if you hadn't showered.
Thank you.
I make no promises. I will try, but we'll see how close I get before I decide whether or not I'm going all in.
So,
let's talk about Stephanie.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have Stephanie on the show this week because we love Stephanie, and frankly, we were concerned that some of our other guests might come on more often. And so we're like, hey, Stephanie.
We got to keep Stephanie as our most frequent flyer. Absolutely.
Also, because Stephanie has a wonderful new book coming out called Sexy by Nature. And if you haven't listened to our podcast with Stephanie before, you must go download them right now. Like, pause the show, download them so that as soon as this one's over, they start streaming on your player.
Stephanie, is this your fourth or fifth time on the show?
I think. Four? Yeah.
And you can find Stephanie, because you're going to love her. You can find more of her on paleoforwomen.com. And if you don't know about her, what I would say, I found Stephanie's website actually a long time ago, and it was called something different, and she had a different platform. But when she re-emerged into the paleo world on paleoforwomen.com, her kind of big boom into the paleo sphere was debunking the myth that intermittent fasting works well for everybody, and had a bunch of really good research and data on how it negatively affected women's hormones to both intermittent fast as well as go really low carb. And it's been something that I have gained so much knowledge and has been hugely valuable in my life, and was a contributing factor in recovering from my health and having that knowledge and learning how to recover my body from doing both of those things for a long time. So thank you again, Stephanie, for contributing to my being healthy and getting my hormones and all that good stuff back on track. So with that in mind, and given kind of what your specialty and expertise is and how Sexy by Nature kind of focuses on that, we thought you might want to talk about hormone imbalances and balances on the show today. Yeah?
I would be so happy to, especially because I think I probably do that in my sleep. So
before we jump into that, do you want to give people the like elevator pitch about Sexy by Nature?
Heck yes, I do. Well, it's funny because I just got my first copy a couple days ago. You know, they like rush deliver.
Right? Oh my gosh, isn't that the most amazing experience ever to be holding your book?
Well, you know, I'm generally like pretty blasé about everything. So I was like, eh. it was a shock. I didn't know it was coming. And when I opened it, I thought it was the packaging envelopes that Susan, our publicist, all three of ours, was sending me. And so anyway, I got the book and I was like, wow, this is cool. Okay, I'm never going to open it. Because I had a feeling that book image would be like body image, right? And I like would only see things I wanted to change. Actually, I picked it up and I've been reading it for the last couple of days. And I don't know how to say this without sounding like a complete ass, but I can't put it down.
I am so looking forward to getting a copy.
Yeah, yeah, you're getting two. They'll be there at the end of the week.
Look out, yeah. Everyone. That means I'm giving one away.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the reason I love this book, I love it so much. We talk about these books like they're our babies, and it's true. It's my baby. It's my manifesto, because we don't pay attention to women's like specific health needs. Right. So there are all these different hormone balancey things going on that don't get a lot of attention, but they significantly impact our wellness. So those things need to be addressed. And it's also important to note that, and Stacey brought this up, certain things that we think work for both men and women don't. Intermittent fasting, for example, low calorie diets, low carbohydrate diets, all sorts of different things. It's just all of our health endeavors, I think, should be undertaken with the knowledge of our unique female physiology and how that might play a role in it. So I hit all those physiological things and I address, you know, the specifics of the female body, but that's also bookended by two big discussions about how you relate to your body, how you like love yourself, how the whole idea about being a natural woman is supposed to help you accept your body and be on this empowering journey. Lots of stuff like that. It's all about fearlessness and love and those are the parts that I really, really love, although I have to say I am enjoying the whole thing. So yeah, that's my plug. I thought I was not going to like my book, and I do like it, which is pretty cool.
It's awesome.
Totally. I think it's well needed. You are obviously have established yourself as a voice in the community that we've needed for a long time. And although we do have at least 22 male listeners, I know that the majority of our listeners are women. And even those 22 men, I've met most of them and they all care about women in their lives. So it's important, I think, for us to, you know, address a lot of these issues and for people to be aware of them so that they can kind of look out for them in their own lives. So that is an excellent bridge, right?
That is an excellent bridge. I want to squeeze in real fast and say that I've been thinking about Matt today, Stacey, because he once expressed to me that I was one of his favorite bloggers, and I'll never forget that. And, you know, this book it's in five parts, and one part is like all about the female body. But the other four parts, you could read that as a man, and just so long as you feel comfortable reading the word sexy a lot, it's an equally good book for both sexes and genders and whatnot. But
I'm 100% sure that Matt would be more than willing to read the word sexy a lot.
Yeah. In fact, all right, that's fair.
I'm pretty sure that Matt is going to be the one that reads the book and then tells me what I need to do. I'm like 99% positive that that's what's going to happen. So,
all right. Well, I do trust him, so good.
Yes. You trust. I am too busy lifting 460 pounds in the gym and feeling sexy just for doing that.
I watched that today. That was pretty awesome.
Strong is beautiful, my friend. Strong is beautiful. Mm-hmm.
You are so inspirational. Actually, both of you are. I love you both.
So are you, Sarah.
Sarah, you must have seen the video I sent you. I'm like so in awe of everything.
I was going to say thank you like once we finished the show, but now that we're doing it, I'll say thank you in the middle of the show. Thank you so much for contributing to that video. I was bawling my eyes out the whole time. Stacey was first, and about 2 seconds in, I started crying and I had mascara like running down my cheeks. I was a mess. There's like pictures and video of me to prove it. And it just was so touching to me that you contributed and took the time out to do that video for me. So thank you so, so much.
You know, I had to record it like 6 different times. And I think the one we actually used, I did at 4 a.m. like when I got home from dancing one night, and your assistant was like, "Hey, it's not Sarah's birthday." And like, I'm like, okay. So anyway, yeah, I'm really glad that I did too.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Okay. So now that my bridge to your science topic is ruined, let me try again. So, figuring out how to realize whether or not you may or may not have hormone imbalance can be something that I think a lot of women could benefit from. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you geeky, awesome ladies have to say about it. And I think one of the things that I'm interested in hearing about, or hearing you share with our audience, because it's something that interests me, is how one hormone that someone could think is a sex hormone and therefore only affects fertility, per se. And I think a lot of women are like, oh, well, if I don't have my period, it's fine because I don't want to have a baby. And then not realizing the snowball effect that that can have on like their overall health and all the rest of the hormones in their body. So I'm hoping that you guys can geek out a little bit on Science with Sarah about that, so that people can kind of realize how important that is, and, you know, kind of doing their own detective work about their body and some of the things that they might be able to do to get it back on track.
Okay, that's not like a billion things to talk about for like 3 hours right there.
Listen, if this show was easy, it wouldn't be cool. I mean...
And we are nothing if not cool.
Definitely. Okay.
All right, so some science with Sarah then.
And Stephanie.
Totally.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So it is not very often on the show where we have a guest whose knowledge is so incredibly detailed in an area in which my knowledge is so incredibly limited. So I really want to take advantage of your knowledge, Stephanie, about sex hormones. And in particular, you know, it's one of those really common experiences, especially with immune and autoimmune diseases. You see it a lot, that estrogen or progesterone are out of whack. And it's one of those things that a lot of women who are struggling with autoimmune disease are struggling also with these sex hormone imbalances. And then it's, I mean, even women who, you know, aren't dealing with chronic illness can still be dealing with these imbalances. It seems to be a really common challenge for women these days. So I think what I really want to ask you is, what are some of the signs that a woman could look for to maybe start suspecting that there's something not quite right about how their estrogen and progesterone, either their levels are, or how their relative levels, or how they're cycling throughout the month? Like, what are some of the sort of key smoke signals?
I think to start, we'd have to back up a tiny bit and include more hormones in that. Because if your estrogen and progesterone are off, there's a decent chance that your testosterone is as well. And there's another male sex hormone, or it's an androgen produced primarily by your adrenal glands called DHEAS, which is also a big player in a lot of the symptoms we see of hormone imbalance. So all of these things, you know, if estrogen and progesterone are fluctuating, then the other ones as well. And then, of course, the thyroid gets involved and cortisol levels and all of these different things. So it's a huge complex web, as everybody, I hope, at least if not knows and experiences. So things, the first thing that is probably the most obvious link to sex hormone imbalance is anything that goes wrong with your reproductive activity. So if you have an irregular menstrual cycle, that's a big red flag, right? If you don't menstruate, like I didn't for several years, big red flag. If your periods are particularly heavy, if you have spotting in between them, if you go a really long time. Also, if your sexual activity or anything, right, anything you do that's not specifically a symptom, like having like a very low libido, right? So that's another thing. These are all sort of obvious signs. Less obvious things would be maybe not sleeping through the night. right, or falling asleep poorly, that's a sign often of low estrogen levels. And having a lot of anxiety is often a sign of low progesterone levels. Being depressed is also often related to hormone imbalance. And that has a lot to do, that's tricky because that has a lot to do not just with the levels of hormones you have, but with the health of hormone receptors in your brain. And so when you start talking about the mental health problems that come along with hormones, you have to also call Emily Deans and bring her on the show. And then you can talk about fats in the brain and neurotransmitters and such. So mental health disturbances, if you have trouble gaining or losing weight, often your hormones can be implicated. And this is why women on birth control often have experienced weight fluctuation, right? Estrogen is just tells your body to like gain. But you also need to have at least a little bit of estrogen to lose or to maintain a healthy weight. And this is largely why women going through menopause struggle with their weight changes, is that the hormone levels are dropping so rapidly. Estrogen and progesterone and testosterone and other male sex hormones are kind of staying the same. And especially if you're in an inflamed state, and then you end up things like with abdominal fat, right? Because your estrogen levels aren't enough to sort of keep your fat burning going the way you'd like. I'm sure there's a lot more, but those are definitely the big ones. Acne is huge. Testosterone causes oil production in the skin. Estrogen has a soothing effect on that. And so this is largely why women's acne goes up and down throughout the menstrual cycle. And also progesterone can be a bit inflammatory to your skin. So if you have super high progesterone levels, that can also be a problem. Okay. Do you have questions? I could keep rambling, but I think that's...
I'm actually taking notes. I have like a billion questions. Let me try and formulate them in a coherent way. So you've mentioned a lot of symptoms that could go with low estrogen, such as trouble sleeping or having sort of abdominal fat. Those are things that we also associate with high cortisol. So that means there's a link between low estrogen and high cortisol?
Well, there is at least a correlation from that data, but you're right. There is a causative link as well. Sorry.
Yeah. And you mentioned acne as both signs of low estrogen or low progesterone? Commonly low estrogen.
Well, low estrogen, but actually it's mostly a problem with high testosterone or high DHEAS, which often accompanies low estrogen. So you could have low estrogen and or high testosterone levels and have acne be a problem.
So you often hear about people talking about estrogen dominance or progesterone dominance. Mm-hmm. Now, does that means that the other one is low? Are there situations where people would have, like, natural situations? Clearly, when you're taking some kind of hormone replacement therapy or right. hormonal birth control, you're completely manipulating the system. But are there natural situations where progesterone or estrogen would be too high?
You mean as caused by diet and lifestyle factors?
Sure, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness, yes.
And do you tend to have one high and one low? Is that?
I would say estrogen dominance is unquestionably the most popular hormone problem for women. This is largely because estrogen is produced in fat cells, and so many women in America are overweight. And it's much more common for estrogen to be elevated over progesterone, but it is possible for it to be the other way. You talked about how the immune system interacting with these hormones, and I'm not sure. I don't know how that's implicated. It's very, in my experience, I don't want to make any promises, but it's pretty uncommon to have a progesterone elevation unless something has happened, unless you've been on birth control, unless you've had some sort of estrogen catastrophe, like a tumor on your pituitary gland or something. Or, of course, in menopause, things are kind of just flying around, you know, when your estrogen and progesterone are both dropping, and they can drop at different rates. And so in that case, it's possible to be progesterone dominant. But other than that, it doesn't happen all that often. Even in menopause, women can be estrogen dominant because progesterone for them would decrease more relative to estrogen, especially if they're overweight.
Yeah, the link between estrogen and progesterone and the immune system is very, very complicated, and in part because of the link between thyroid hormones and the link mm-hmm. between cortisol, and then those links with the immune system. But estrogen and progesterone are used to control the type of cell because that's being produced. So what they really influence is TH1 and TH2 T cell populations. So a lot mm-hmm. of people will be familiar with TH1 and TH2 dominance in autoimmune disease. And that's kind of an old idea. We now know that the immune system is much, much more complicated. There's a lot more cells at play. But there is still some sort of truth to that TH1 and TH2 dominance. And what estrogen and progesterone do is they can actually affect which cell type is produced, TH1 or TH2. And that's a really, really important part of pregnancy because there's a shift in the immune system. And that's a shift in TH1 and TH2 cells. So mm-hmm. so that can actually then cycle throughout the month, which is why there's actually, in some autoimmune diseases, you'll see variations in symptoms throughout a woman's menstrual cycle. Or you'll see things like onset of autoimmune disease with puberty, or you'll see that the autoimmune disease goes away with menopause, or onset of other autoimmune diseases with menopause. There's a lot of autoimmune diseases and pregnancy. You'll have either remission or flare pretty typically with pregnancy. And then you'll have whichever one you happen to have with pregnancy, you typically have the opposite upon the birth of the baby. So it's a really complex interaction, and in part is a complex interaction because of the links between sex hormones and the HPA axis and the function of the thyroid. And I'm learning so much that's sort of creating also some links into the immune system, because I actually developed my autoimmune disease while I was on Depo-Provera. And so to me, that's really interesting because clearly I was progesterone dominant since I was injecting myself with progesterone at the time. So I guess my next question is, given the range of estrogen-progesterone mix and progesterone birth controls out there, I don't think other people are taking birth control, estrogen, progesterone anyways. When women go on those birth control, it's very typical for women to do that at some point in their young adult lives. Does that influence estrogen dominance versus progesterone dominance later after they've stopped and kept going with their lives?
Very often, actually. I can't say... The sample of women I deal with is biased because women come to me with problems, right? So I can't tell you how often this happens, but there are two ways by which hormonal birth control can, I don't want to say mess you up, but sort of can influence your health in the long run. First is that your hormone systems always run on negative feedback loops, right? So if you have a certain hormone in your bloodstream, your body's going to detect it and it's going to downregulate its production. That makes sense. So if you take a pill or you take a shot or a patch or what have you every day of estrogen and or progesterone, your body's going to see that and it's going to downregulate its own production. And if you get on the pill and you're on it for a significant period of time, or it could be short if you're very sensitive, and especially if you start young, like in puberty, when you come off of it, your pituitary gland might be like, what? It's lazy, right? It's used to having its work done for it. And so it doesn't really know quite what's going on. And then the second means by which this happens is that you can build up estrogen in your liver while you're on birth control. This is less of a problem with progesterone because your body is interested in clearing estrogen out of your body because it it knows how much of a problem it is. And again, it's so commonly dominant. And so your body's building up these estrogen stores in your liver while you're on the pill, and then you come off of it, and these estrogen deposits stick around until they get completely flushed out. And so from these two effects, many women can take several months, you know, up to a year to start menstruating again. And that depends totally on how healthy they are and how quick their liver picks up and their pituitary picks back up on functioning. But it can be a problem if you come off the pill and you're expecting to get pregnant right away.
So I think the most obvious question is, if women are suspecting that they have some kind of imbalance with their hormones, how can they test for that?
Well, a blood test works great. The thing about getting your blood tested for hormone levels is you've got to be careful because they fluctuate so much during the month. So if you're a regular cycler, just be very cognizant of when you're doing it and be sure to tell your doctor, because then they'll know, be able to compare your levels to what they, you know, ideally should be relative to other times of the cycle. And so, I mean, I can give you a rundown of the things I think you should have tested, and I could tell you all what they indicate. But the things you want to test: estrogen, right? That's estradiol. There's actually three different kinds of estrogen, and they're produced in different places. And so you want to, if you can, make sure you get the three different ones tested, right? Because some is produced in fat cells, some in the ovaries, some in the pituitary gland, and other glands throughout the body. Estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and there are different types of testosterone, you know, free and whatnot. And then DHEAS, like I said, that's a sex hormone, but it's produced by your adrenal glands. And if you're really stressed out, you're going to kick up your DHEAS, which can give you acne and which can give you PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. Those are the four main things you want to test. You might also want to do cortisol, a cortisol panel over the course of a day, because stress can significantly decrease your estrogen and progesterone levels. And then you're going to want to get your thyroid tested, right? So T3, T4, and TSH are all important, and Hashimoto's thyroiditis antibodies are important, so you can figure out exactly what's going on with your thyroid. And I'm sure you've probably discussed this on your show many times, or at least a handful, but a lot of medical professionals will only test TSH or T4 and say, oh, your body's thyroid production is fine. But T3 is really the end of the line. And if you're not testing T3, you don't know if you're making it all the way to the end of the line.
Yeah.
And so that's very important, because thyroid and, you know, estrogen and progesterone levels are highly related. And if you don't have thyroid production, your body is not really going to want to do much of anything. And since the reproductive system is the first one that gets shut down when things start going wrong, your body's going to go ahead and, you know, let your reproductive cells falter. And I think those are the main hitters. Prolactin, you're going to want to test, especially if you're having a hard time figuring out what's wrong, because that can indicate if you have some sort of a tumor or a growth going on in your brain. And that's not super common, but it's also not as uncommon as you would think in hormone imbalance. And I think that's it. Test your vitamin D, because vitamin D is important for hormone production as well. So,
and just so that people aren't freaking out, it's very, very common for pituitary tumors to be benign and be fairly mm-hmm. easily dealt with. So just so that people don't go, oh no, my hormones are out of whack, I have a brain tumor.
Right. And it's funny, because the prolactin is highly related to the area of the pituitary that talks to the hypothalamus. And so it's highly sensitive to the downregulation that your body does in response to starvation and other stressors. So estrogen and progesterone, oh, you know what I forgot? These are important. You want to test luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. These are the two hormones that come out of your pituitary gland and tell your ovaries what to do. And so if you're under like too much stress, and that comes again, both from psychological problems and restrictive mentalities, you know, restrictive eating and behaviors, too much exercise, your LH and your FSH are going to suffer, and they'll be in the basement. And that's a really good indicator that something you know, that you're being too restrictive. And then also, if those levels are elevated, then that's a pretty good indicator that you have polycystic ovarian syndrome or some such thing. And then you can sort of attack that on its own. That's it. I got it. That's all of them.
I love that you are an encyclopedia of women's hormones.
I think it's awesome. It sure doesn't feel like it from my end.
Okay. So, what, you know, if a woman goes and gets tested and she finds that she has an imbalance in some of these hormones, you know, clearly her healthcare professional is going to have some suggestions for what kind of, you know, potentially she could be doing, you know, some targeted therapy for dealing with those imbalances. But what mm-hmm. are sort of the first step diet and lifestyles, most important things to do to regulate, like, whatever the issue is? I'm assuming there's sort of a, you know, there's certain things that are just really, really important for regulating sex hormones.
My umbrella recommendation, read my book. No, my, well, do.
No, I think it's important yeah. for people to know what kind of information you do cover in your book.
Right. And I talk about this extensively, and I promise it's accessible. but I say that because what women need to do in order to have hormone balance is to think about what your natural body really, like, really wants and really craves, right? We are paleo dieters or what, you know, what have you. We are sexy by our nature. Think about what your body needs and then do your best to meet that need. So there are two primary ways for your body to be freaking out. There are two very broad categories. One is to be in a state of excess, right? You're overweight, you're inflamed, you eat poor foods, low nutrient status, whatever. Your hormones are all probably going to be pretty high, you know, trying to keep up with all this other stuff going on in your body. So you're in this state of excess and you're like, all right, like, I need to cool it, right? I need to eat whole foods. I need to, and of course your gut health is highly implicated in all of this. So the number one thing you want to do is, you know, cut the gut irritants, the usual suspects, and do your best to heal that. And then also, you know, you can be on the other side of the spectrum. So you have the excess on one side, and you can have the restriction on the other side, the deprivation. And that comes from under eating, being stressed, exercising too much, not sleeping enough, right? All of this stressors sort of suck the life out of your pituitary gland. And so you generally end up in one of these two camps, but with whichever camp you end up in, you have to think about how you're going to meet in the middle, right? Like, nourish your body. Like, err on the side of nourishment, right? Like, focus on including foods that are really healthy, right? Like, this is something that you two emphasize that I appreciate so much, is you want to boost your nutrient stores, right? So I think that's the best way to think about hormone imbalance. And, you know, having been on birth control can throw you in either one of the camps, and you really don't know what's going on in your body until you come off of it. You know, so many women have hormone imbalances going on underneath the birth control, but don't really know it because they've been on it for so long, and then they come off and they're like, holy crap, I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. I might have had it for 10 years. I don't know. So that's my blanket recommendation. Of course, I recommend, you know, a paleo type diet. Of course, I recommend not eliminating carbohydrates. I recommend making sure you eat at very minimum 50 grams of fat per day, which is at least a tablespoon per meal, and omega-3 fats, you know, EPA and DHA are great for hormone production. Like I said, vitamin D and just all the micro minerals. I could talk for ages and ages about how all of them are very important. And more than anything, I would say to any woman who wants to have hormone balance, I'd say, chill out. Step number one, chill out. Step number two, learn about your body, right? You can't fix what's going on unless you kind of get educated about what the problem is. And then you can start healing it with more specific strategies than just, I'm going to drink bone broth and cut bread out of my diet.
Although those two things can make a big difference.
Huge difference. Those things are at the top of the list. Do those things
while you're getting tested, right? And while you're thinking about more specific ways to tailor your whole foods lifestyle to sort of get yourself back on track.
Awesome. Yep. Yes. And I think I just want to point out, I'm sure if it wasn't already obvious to everyone, but how intricately all of these things are laced. And, you know, Stephanie, how I heard you summarize it at the end was one of the biggest things that I really needed to do in order to heal myself, which is really focus on my own stress. And I recently recorded a podcast that's not yet out, and I'll tell people where to find that. And it's run by women who focus on kind of body image and eating disorder backgrounds and that kind of stuff. So it was like an hour with me on that stuff. And what I ended up saying over and over again, and I didn't plan it this way, but it was just like my answer to every question that they had on how I've resolved a lot of these issues for myself is find the joy. Like, and I just kept saying it over and over again, because for me personally, like that's how I've managed my own stress, is finding the things in my life that really bring me joy and making sure that I find time for them, so that when I'm doing all the other crazy stuff, because I'm a type A personality who overachieves and always overexerts and signs up for more than I should, as long as I'm balancing that with finding joy in my life and finding time to do the things that like bring me happiness, it balances out those stress factors in my life. And that helped me from, you know, the cortisol sex hormone factor. It also helped me from an autoimmune factor. It helps me sleep better. And it helps me also focus when I am working on the other things, instead of thinking like, oh, you know, I really miss the boys. I'd rather be spending time with them right now. Like, I'm not worried about that stuff because I've already made time for that in my life. And I think it's really important that you kind of brought that full circle for people, because it's not one or the other or another. And I know it's hard for people because they want to hear like, well, what is the thing that I need to do? It isn't a thing. Mm-hmm. It's hard, and it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of different factors across a lot of different spectrums. And I think, you know, Sarah comes from it from the scientific point, but also there's a huge focus on lifestyle factors in the paleo approach. And that's because of this important link in everyone's lives. Like, we are just digital go, go, go culture. And that has taken an amazing toll on everyone's health. And, you know, it's, I just wanted to make sure that I articulated to everyone what I heard you say, which is how important that is in terms of the hormones that you're talking about as well.
Hugely. And I find so often, this is important, I find so often that women think they're doing the de-stress thing right, and they're not. You know, totally. it's because we're so used to the stress being at such a high level that we actually don't know what a stress-free or stress-minimal life is like or could be like. And so I challenge people, I think this is really important, to at some point in your life do everything possible to get the stress as far away from you as possible. I mean, it could be something as simple as a vacation, but just do it, and then you experience it, and then you try and replicate the way that you feel in your day-to-day life.
Like a vacation. People should, that's what I think about. Like, I think that's a good scenario, right? Like, a lot of people live for vacations, and it's like, okay, I need this 1 week or 2 weeks a year. And that's not to say that you shouldn't enjoy your vacation, but like, I feel very strongly that our family has mini vacations a lot, even if we don't go anywhere that day. Like, I end up feeling as refreshed and fulfilled from the finding the things in my life that bring me joy, the same way that a lot of people find taking a week off of work and traveling. And I think like Diane Sanfilippo talks about this a lot too. Like, if you're doing something in your life that causes you so much stress and unhappiness, then it's time to think about figuring out how to remove that from your life. And from a lot of people, that's scary. And for a lot of people, you know, that sounds like voodoo talk or whatever. Like, I just think it's really important, because even though Sarah and I both are type A personalities and overachievers and do too much, like, we both do it because we love it, you know? And so even though it can be stressful for us, we have to manage in our own lives, like, how we're balancing that. But the good news is that we're doing it because we love it. And it's not something that, like, we don't wake up in the morning and dread, like, oh, I have to, you know, podcast with Stephanie. You know, like, I'm here because I enjoy talking to you, and it's something that I'm choosing to do. This is not something that I would say, quote unquote, brings me joy, but that's because I had an entire weekend where I got to spend time with my family and do the things that I wanted to do. And now I'm able to work on my weekend time because I focused on those other things. And that's how I personally have found the importance of balancing hormones and fixing my health and, you know, really working on resolving stress, because I just personally, it is definitely one of the things that affected me the most. And Sarah and I have talked about it on the podcast before, like, for the most part, we find that the people that have autoimmune diseases are often the people who are these type A personalities that are overachievers, mm-hmm. that have a huge amount of stress in their life. And that's kind of, you know, an initiating factor for people.
And also the caregivers, the people who spend so much of their lives looking after other people that they don't take the time to look after themselves. That sort of, that sort of personality also, you know, and it really comes down to the stress level that goes with that personality type, I think.
And to be fair, I have a feel, well, I agree with you completely. I also have a feeling, I have a suspicion that a higher than average number of people in the paleo sphere are also, you know, sort of revved up perfection, not necessarily perfectionist-y, but we're a movement full of people who are, you know, tweaking it and looking to perfect their health. And so I find that there are, that this this sort of I'm trying to pick really good language. I don't want to.
I get where you're trying to say. A lot of us are type A personalities, and I think where that originated from is a lot of us had other jobs or still have other jobs, but have like made this a priority because we want to spread the word and we're passionate and we're overachievers and we think we can and we have talent and we want to share that with the world. And with that comes a lot of pressure, both external and internal, to try to save the world. Like, that's honestly how most of us feel, is that we're trying to save the world. And that's, is that what you're trying to say?
That's absolutely what I'm trying to say. But I also think the leaders are somewhat representative of people who were, especially at the outset, drawn to the paleo diet, right? Because it's sort of a realm in which, especially, you know, we're tied up with fitness and CrossFit, and it's a realm in which you can like very easily be like, oh, I see perfect health on the horizon and I'm going to get that. And so even the pursuit for health can become a
stressor.
Pursuit. Yeah, it can be a stressor. And so I just, you know, chill out, eat whole foods, heal on your own time. You're going to get there, but just chill out about it. I promise everything's okay.
We should like put that on a loop. That's like the most quotable little line right there. Chill out. I promise everything's okay. We should put that in, like, sample it for a song or something.
The zombie apocalypse is not upon you yet. All right.
Stephanie, do you have time for a few questions?
Absolutely. Always.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Corey from Neptune Beach, Florida. And Corey writes, Stacy and Sarah, thank you so much for all that you do. Sarah, congrats on your book success. Thank you. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I've been reading that endometriosis may be linked to autoimmunity, and I am wondering if you think the autoimmune protocol could help reduce the symptoms and or delay growth. I've been having extremely painful periods for over 2 years now. Interestingly enough, I started getting the terrible pains when I began paleo. Any thoughts on this? And my gynecologist suspects it is endometriosis. To know for sure, she would have to perform a laparoscopy, which is a type of surgery. The only other medical treatment I was offered was birth control pills. Unfortunately, I am not interested in either of these options as a first resort to treatment. However, I have been trying to manage different aspects of my diet and lifestyle by myself with the hopes of balancing my hormones, but nothing seems to work. I am desperate. The pain is not only unbearable, but I am sensitive to the drastic hormonal changes during my cycle. I often feel irritable and moody and experience extreme bloating. My fertility is extremely important to me, and I am concerned that if I don't get this under control, I may be compromising my ability to conceive in the future. Do you have any insight on endometriosis and the autoimmune protocol? P.S. I see that NSAIDs are not recommended on the autoimmune protocol. I am not sure that I could undergo the pain without the use of them. Any thoughts on how to navigate that situation? And P.P.S. Do you have any thoughts on supplementation? I began taking Feminescence Maca Harmony and haven't seen any noticeable difference yet, but only started them 2 weeks ago. Thanks again for all you do. I think there's about six questions in there.
Uh-huh.
Stephanie, do you want to take first dibs?
Sure. Well, I know that I always do this, but I think it's okay. I would respond to these questions with some more questions, such as, right, so you noticed that something happened 2 years ago. So what, and you went paleo, but I would want to know more about what that means and what happened to you, right? So does that mean you dropped carbohydrates? Does that mean that you started eating a lot more fat than you used to? Which is it's a good thing, but it can also mean that if you were under eating fat and then you start eating a lot of fat, your body's going to produce the hormones that it wanted to be producing in the first place, you know? And so that can be a problem. I noticed that when some people start experiencing a lot of women experience problems on a paleo diet, I often suspect if it's because they're overeating protein, which can sort of backlog detox in a sort of way, right? It can be a little bit inflammatory. And so that can also be a bit of a tell, you know, did you lose weight? Did you start exercising a lot? These things are all important. And so those are the questions I would ask back. And, but then you can just sort of take the fact that she has this probably endometriosis problem and say, okay, what do we do about that? And Sarah, I can't remember if we've interacted about this before online, and there's a pretty fierce debate about whether endometriosis is an autoimmune disease or not. And the consensus in the community seems to be tipping towards it's not, and it's more a problem of impaired immune function. But I would also defer to you on this because I know almost nothing about the immune system.
Yeah, the research that I've done has shown that there's actually a really, really strong case for it being an autoimmune disease, or at least having some kind of link to autoimmunity. So there are quite a few conditions that almost seem to be secondary autoimmune conditions, so that there's like a primary autoimmune disease, and endometriosis is one of those ones that may be secondary to other autoimmune issues. Mm-hmm. But there is a fairly good body of literature now that's supporting, it's not 100% confirmed, but there is a fairly good body of literature supporting that there's at least an autoimmune component. So, you know, generally, you know, even if it was only an immune component, if not an autoimmune component, my recommendations would still be the same. So it would be nutrient-dense diet, focus on lots of sleep, focus on stress management, focus on mild and moderate activity, avoiding really intense activity, making sure that you're regulating circadian rhythms by being outside during the day, and you know, keeping the lights dim in your house in the evening, sleeping in a very dark, cool room, and all of those things are going to help regulate the immune system. There happens to be a fairly large overlap between those recommendations and the recommendations that you would have, Stephanie, in terms of regulating hormones.
Definitely, and endometriosis is without question a problem of estrogen dominance. And especially, and I would say it's problematic because once you implant endometrial tissue, it doesn't really go away. You can sort of minimize it, but it's there. And so it's possible you can correct a balance and still deal with the tissue. But a lot of a high level of estrogen will cause more to grow and will cause what's already there to be more painful, right? Estrogen is what makes menstrual cramps hurt. So, and it's also seems to be, right, she reports having sort of behavioral problems, right? Irritability and mood swings and such, and extreme bloating. So it seems as though there's definitely something fishy with her estrogen going on. And I without knowing more about her and her life and, you know, any really anything, I couldn't say anything about that. But I would only say that maybe some focus on liver health. Consider some liver. There are some like popular liver supplements that could help, such as taking NAC, N-acetylcysteine. That's a popular liver health supplement. There's also milk thistle is very popular, but milk thistle is also a little bit of a phytoestrogen, which is interesting because in some women it makes estrogen dominance worse, but in some it can make it better. So I'm not gonna come down hard on whether or not you should experiment with phytoestrogens, but some liver support would be really good, and stress reduction and reducing inflammation as much as you can. And you're right, NSAIDs are not recommended, and you should I would recommend considering other pain killing options. Magnesium goes a long way in reducing cramping, pains from cramping, and so that could help. Omega-3 fats can also help a lot. So if you're fish or...
I was going to say that.
Oh, God. Smart minds. Mm. Right? So, omega-3 fats, right? Especially if you're doing it with cod liver oil, that fermented would be great. So those are some things to sort of help ease the pain, and considering more natural ways of dealing with soothing that inflammation.
No. Are you familiar with the Feminescence Maca Harmony?
No, I was going to Google it, but I started talking, so I didn't.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it either. So
it's not like a popular, well-known, you know, supplement. I'm Googling it right now.
Okay. Oh, I love computers. They're such a handy dandy thing. So the other thing I was going to mention is that insoluble fiber, like what you would be getting from leafy greens. So basically any non-starchy vegetable is typically higher in insoluble fiber than soluble fiber, can help bind up those excess hormones in the digestive tract and stop them from being recycled. So it's a really, I mean, everyone knows I'm like super pro veggie, and I believe that we should eat vegetables until like forever. I've basically channeled all of my used to be binge eating disorder into vegetable eating. And so everyone knows I'm really pro veggie. And one of the reasons is it actually is probably a normal help with where our bodies are probably adapted to high vegetable intake to help actually with things like hormone recycling. It also actually, oddly enough, it helps bind hormones to help them help stop them from being recycled and help the body to excrete them. But it also does things like support bile acid recycling. So it actually makes it easier to recycle bile acids, which is a good thing because that actually supports digestion overall. It helps then increase absorption of fat-soluble vitamins. So there's like a whole, you know, soluble and insoluble fiber have actually some really interesting effects in terms of the recycling of things like vitamin D. These are actually all secreted into the digestive tract, and then our body tries to like recycle and grab those things back. And some things you want to come back and some things you don't. And that's one of the reasons why a high vegetable intake can be really, really powerful and support. In many ways, it also supports detox because there's a lot of toxins that are also bound to insoluble fiber and then excreted that way as well.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that focusing on leafy greens can also support your liver in addition to being they're kind of rough in terms of insoluble fiber, but they can help your liver. And also I found that Feminescence thing, and from what I can tell, there's a lot of hype about it without telling you exactly what's in it, which puts up flags for me personally. But it does say that there were clinical trials, but the only data that I'm seeing is that it increased, it says that it's for hormone balance, and it increased estrogen levels in menopausal women, Which is great for the menopausal women, but I'm curious what it would do for younger women, and if this woman who wrote in is struggling with estrogen dominance, then I'm not certain that the feminescence is the way to go. But again, I'm only reading a paper written by the CEO of the company that produces it, so that needs a grain of salt as well.
And then the last thing I want to mention is one of the best foods that people can eat for liver health is liver. And that's because we get this, there's this idea that the liver, because it's a filter and it filters toxins, that it therefore stores toxins. And that's not true. It processes them and then it sends them either to the kidneys so the kidneys can put them into the urine, or it packages it up with the bile in the gallbladder so it gets excreted into the small intestine. And then in some cases it will process these toxins and ship it off to fat cells for storage. But most of it is excreted. It's thrown into the small intestine and then you poop it out later. So what the liver does store is all of the vitamins and minerals and antioxidants that your liver needs to do those chemical reactions to process the toxins before they're shipped off. And so the eating liver is the best food that you can eat to provide your liver with all of the materials that it needs to detoxify.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. Let's go on to another question. This one is from Jennifer from Oakville, Connecticut. Hey, ladies. First off, I love your show. I came across it the other day through Abel James' podcast, and it's so nice to hear women talk about their bodies as natural, normal things and not be embarrassed. Seriously, the female body is so cool. So here's my dilemma. I've been off the pill since January 2013, was on it for 7-8 years. I noticed I had longer irregular cycles, 31 to 40 days, but didn't think much about it. We started trying to conceive in September, and as of January 2014, no luck. I did speak with my midwife about the possibility of PCOS, and she felt I didn't have PCOS, but suggested Taking Control of Your Fertility by Tony Weschler, temping and using LH test strips. I did, and I noticed I only have an 8 to 9 day luteal phase, so I see spotting around 8 to 9 days, but my temp stays high through the middle of menstruation. And that is a lot of details that I hope Stephanie can decipher for us. My question is, can a really strict paleo diet help resolve this issue, or do you have other recommendations? We try to be 80-20 paleo, but after listening to you ladies, realize we could do much better. Apparently, I need to try liver. Just curious if you guys had any advice as to whether it or not this can be fixed on its own, or if I'm going to have to see an RE and look at medical interventions. I'm 29 and feel like my clock is ticking and so badly want a family.
Okay, so really strict paleo can help, because it's going to, if we're doing it in an autoimmune kind of way, I'm not sure what really strict means. What does that mean? Making sure that you don't eat gut-irritating foods? Like, yes, that is going to help. It's going to help your gut. It's going to cool inflammation, and it's going to facilitate all those liver-enhancing things that we just talked about, right? So focus on the liver things. Because it sounds to me like she's struggling with what we call post-birth control syndrome, right? So a lot of estrogen can be cleared in that way. Having a short luteal phase. So the menstrual cycle is divided into two phases with ovulation smack dab in the center. The first 2 weeks, it starts with your first day of bleeding. And I know that I'm going through basic things, but I swear I didn't know that until I was 22 years old. So first day of bleeding is the first day of the menstrual cycle, and you've got 2 weeks of the follicular phase, which is where you build follicles, which will then mature into eggs, or one of them will become the egg. And then you have ovulation, and then you have a luteal phase. And that's the one in which your estrogen, like after ovulation, your testosterone spikes, and then after that, your estrogen and progesterone start, playing with each other, going up, 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 and down, and it's it's an interesting graph. There's a good one on the Wikipedia page if you want to go take a look. And so having a shortened phase, I'm not 100% certain on, you know, on what this indicates. But the fact that her temperature stays high throughout the middle of menstruation just suggests that her estrogen and progesterone levels are elevated more than they would otherwise be. And I have a feeling that that's because she was on the pill for a long time. And it's also possible that having been on the pill for 8 years, that things started to go a bit wonky and it was covered up by the pill. So anyway, I think the recommendations that we made were good. And I think her idea to move beyond 80-20 could do nothing but help, right? It is definitely not going to hurt. And then, you know, there were a whole lot more things you could test other than your LH, right? Like taking control of your fertility. This book by Toni Weschler is about the fertility awareness method and also, you know, how to become more fertile. But you really, like I said, you really can't, I don't believe you can really get at what's going on in your body unless you have a good idea what's going on. So I would recommend getting tested for many of the hormones that we talked about earlier, you know, get a full hormone panel done. Then you can understand a little bit more about what's going on. You know, there may be a thyroid issue at play there. It could very well be a stress issue and you don't know unless you look at it. But again, the recommendations we've made, they will certainly not hurt. Just make sure that you don't cut carbohydrates when you go strict paleo, because that's not what paleo should mean.
There seems to be a really close link between thyroid issues and either things like PCOS or endometriosis or uterine fibroids or other sort of sex hormone fertility issues. It seems to be a fairly common, you know, secondary condition to thyroid mm-hmm. problems. And Stephanie, I'm gathering that's just because of all of the links between sex hormones and thyroid hormones.
Well, yeah. And it's very hard to, you know, could you say one causes the other? I'm not sure. Right.
There's, because the link goes both ways. So, mm-hmm. The thyroid hormones affect sex hormone levels and sex hormone levels affect thyroid hormone levels. So that means that you can start from either side of that coin or even start from the stress side, because stress affects both of them as well. Mm-hmm. And end up developing one first and then the other, developing both together, and not really, you know, just because you develop both together doesn't mean you get diagnosed with both at the same time. But it's, mm-hmm. Especially people I know who have Hashimoto's seem to just have really, really yes. big problems with fertility. And it just mm-hmm. seems to be, it's almost a symptom of Hashi's. Like it's pretty much just a really common experience for people, which is, you know, frustrating.
It is. And I want to make one more note to this woman, having read her question. She seems reluctant to go see a standard doctor, and she says, look at medical interventions. And I would just say that it doesn't hurt to talk to them, right? Like there's a pretty big, like, sort of superiority over the medical professional complex or whatever that we have in the paleosphere. And I think, like, I think that's okay, but it does not hurt to get somebody who's trained in this from a medical, you know, a medical perspective. It doesn't hurt to talk to them. And you can even go get a bunch of tests done and still not do what they recommend that you do. But you'll be able to learn, you know, what's going on. The way my doctor and I have a wonderful relationship, where I go and I ask for a bunch of tests and he recommends some tests and I get them done and then we talk about them and that's it, right? So I don't think you have to be afraid of interacting with doctors. It might take a while to find one that you really like, but I just want to throw this out there because I think I run into a lot of women who want to solve things holistically, and that's great. But science, right? Like the science of blood testing can be really powerful too. So,
anyway. I'm pro science.
Yes, I am super. I like science. It does a lot of cool stuff. So myself.
Okay. We have one more question, and I think because we've talked about a lot of these issues, I think we can probably do a fairly quick answer. Are we cool for one more question? I will be fast. All right. This one is from Nina. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Hi, Stacey and Sarah. First of all, let me take this opportunity to thank you for taking the time out of your busy lives to answer my question and for all the great work you do with your podcast, your books, and blogs. Considering that you also have families and jobs, I honestly don't understand how you find the time. And I can speak for both Stacey and I, neither do we. Now to my question. I have been following paleo lifestyle for about 4 months now and have definitely seen a lot of good things come out of it. But one symptom has me worried. I had menstrual-like bleeding every month between my periods for the entire time I've been living paleo. For my own research, I suspected increased estrogen that's being released by the fat cells as I'm losing fat and using fat for energy. Nothing else seems to make sense so far, but if you have another explanation, I'd love to hear it. However, if it is what I think it is, I'm not sure what to do about it. I know excess estrogen is bad, especially if it's having such an obvious effect on my body, and I am still morbidly obese, so I don't want to try and stop losing weight. Any thoughts or suggestions would be appreciated. Sorry for the long question, or rather questions. Thanks again.
So, it's fascinating, but women come to me a lot and say, my period started acting up when I went paleo. And that's a problem for me personally because I think it's different in every single case. So I can't say, well, this is what's causing that and that's what's causing that. I think the estrogen hypothesis is the good one. I'm looking at her, you know, her weight loss story right now and her foods and such. 290 pounds to 250 pounds. Magnesium, vitamin D, gut problems. Yeah, like still being over 200 pounds is indicates to me that like things are going to fluctuate for a long time. And so what I would recommend actually is trying to not do it too hard. Like stay on your whole foods and stay on your weight loss regimen, but I wouldn't force it because I don't want your body to read this as a stressor, right? You want this to be a healthy thing and a good thing, and losing the weight is a good thing. But I don't know how much of that is stress related for you. And I think you're doing a great job trying to be so good to your gut, and trying to keep inflammation to a minimum. So I would just say, you know, don't cut fat too much, don't cut carbohydrates too much. You say you're not eating a lot of carbs, probably between 50 and 100 per day. So I would keep that at the very minimum. And honestly, I want to say you need to give your body time. And I know that that's not the best answer in the world to hear. But I would give it a little bit of time. And I personally, I'd get some tests done because, again, you can't really know what's going on unless you put it under a microscope and can get it for certain.
And I think we've talked a little bit already about things like eating a lot of vegetables to help your body excrete excess hormones. It's certainly you know, there's a lot of things that can be stored in fat, and when you're losing fat, there's a lot of fat soluble things like hormones and some toxins that your body may have stored. That can be released. I know that John Berardi has talked about seeing with his clients that have lost a lot of weight that there seems to be this like toxic load that's dumped into the body with really rapid weight loss, and then that requires supporting the liver and supporting detox, which we've already talked about. And so those are things that I would look at. The other thing that she mentions is that her carb intake is between 50 and 100 grams per day. And I know that low carb is really great for weight loss. Unfortunately, it's also really great for causing things like leptin resistance, which makes it really hard to maintain that weight loss. So you're kind of losing weight at the expense of being able to keep it off. And that's really not a good trade because keeping it off is way more work than losing it in the first place. So increasing carbs a little bit you know, maybe do 100 grams as a minimum instead of 50. So 100 mm-hmm. to 150 grams may make a really big difference in actually not just sex hormones, but thyroid hormone and stress. So going too low mm-hmm. carb can increase cortisol. And also insulin is actually required for T4 to T3 conversion. We've already sort of talked about T3 being the sort of most active thyroid hormone. T4 is considered a pro-hormone, although it does have some activity as well. It's converted into T3, and that's really the thyroid hormone that's doing all of the work. And you actually need to secrete insulin to be able to do that conversion. So being too low-carb, that's why low-carb diets can be so hard on the thyroid gland, is because if we're not producing any insulin because our carbs are so low, we don't have that support for the T4 to T3 conversion. So mm-hmm. So that's another place to play around. And then lots of sleep, stress management, all of those things are also really, really important for getting your body through those transitions. Yes. Stacey, you still there?
I am still here.
And Peppy, woohoo!
Thanks for your patience, Stacey.
What? I'm like a podcast listener right now. I'm just soaking it all in.
This is like Geek Town podcast. It's awesome. So do we have, Stephanie, do you have any final thoughts, any final plugs for anything you would like to let our listeners know about?
No, like, just give yourself all that love and all that nourishment, you know, and have patience, and yeah, you'll get there.
And get yourself a copy of Sexy by Nature.
Get yourself a copy of Sexy by Nature. Come to my blog. I'll give a lot of them away. They give you a lot of copies to give to friends, and I don't have a whole lot of those, so.
Oh, I'm your friend.
I'm your friend, too.
I know. You get free ones because, you know. Because you helped me, so.
Sweet. So, again, just to remind our listeners, Stephanie's blog is paleoforwomen.com. And Stephanie is, you know, anytime anybody asks me anything related to hormones, I'm like, I think you should check out Paleo for Women. It's like my number one. I probably recommend more people to your site, Stephanie, than like all other paleo blogs combined.
Well, yeah, that's because you can answer all those other questions yourself.
Yeah, hormones is not my strongest area of expertise, at least not sex hormones. I understand the sort of stress hormones and hunger hormones a lot better. But I love geeking out with you, Stephanie, and I just love your perspective on women and the, you know, female body and life in general. And I really would like to, and I know we plugged the previous podcast that you were on at the beginning of the show, but we have just had some of the most amazing discussions with Stephanie on some of our previous podcasts about things like body image. And I would really urge people, if you're sort of new listeners and you didn't do the marathon session of starting from the beginning, which I know some people do, but not everybody does. I definitely would recommend going back and listening to those other podcasts with Stephanie, because there are some just, you know, gem best of moments in those podcasts, and probably in this one too.
We actually have best of shows too. So you're going to catch a lot of good stuff with Stephanie if you start with those as well.
Aw. Well, shucks.
So, Stacey, is there anything else we need to tell everyone before we call it a night?
Just a quick reminder, if you're a new listener to our show and you have found us through Radio IO, could you let us know? And also, if you could leave reviews in iTunes, that would be much appreciated, because it encourages other people to check out the show, and hopefully we can reach a greater audience through your 2 minutes of help, and we really appreciate it. You can also check out all of our websites, and I know Sarah and I have some upcoming book signings and events, so make sure to check our press and events pages on both of our blogs. And all three of us have very active Facebook community pages, so if you ever want to talk about more or find people with similar interests, check those out, or subscribe on our blogs for our newsletters, which are also kind of epic and awesome in their own ways.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a show.
Thank you so much for coming on, Stephanie. I can't wait till I get to hug you again. And I may or may not be showered, but it's good to know you're there for me either way.
Well, thank you. I promise I won't be. So we're good. Do your worst.
I am so looking forward to hanging out with both of you at PaleoFX. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. You too.
All right. See you next week, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
My mom moved in with us, and my mom is the most obsessed Walking Dead person I've ever met in my entire life. And we've got to keep the show to around an hour, because if I go after 9:15, my mom is literally going to rip the cord out of the computer. We're just perfect.
We run a classy outfit here.
Yeah, we do.